Good morning, everyone. We are discussing Emuna, and today we are introduced to a dimension of Emuna which affects our whole perspective on life. So much of what we do and how we view things is relational. It's compared to what? What's the frame in which I'm viewing this experience? So that's true in terms of measuring, meaning how affluent is someone? Well, compared to whom? Right? How much free time do I have? Well, compared to what? What's the benchmark? And then the frame is, what's the context in which I'm viewing this? You know, I have this experience, or I have this situation. Well, in what context, compared to what, am I viewing this? You know, did that experience that made me feel a certain way, that made me feel that way because I came at it with a certain frame or a certain perspective. If I had looked at it from a different perspective, maybe I would have felt differently coming out of that experience. So Emuna is going to play an important role in this construct of how we navigate and frame the experiences that we have in our lives. So to think about that, the chapter of this section, this chapter, Parak Shmona Esrei, is called Chinuch LeEmuna, but it first deals with this one comment of the Rambam, good morning, in the Pirush HaMishnayos. You know, the Rambam lived in the 12th century. He wrote a commentary on the Mishnah when he was a teenager. Begishtenu, when as we approach, levarer, to clarify, mau hachinuch le'emuna. So the title of this, as we said, this phrase, chinuch le'emuna, is an important thing just to define first in and of itself. He says, Yadrich Osanu HaRambam, the Rambam will guide us. But before we get to the Rambam, what do the words chinuch le'emuna mean? What does lechanech mean?
To educate.
Right, to educate. What does it mean to educate in a Torah context? Where does the word chinuch appear when you talk about it from a traditional halachic or Jewish understanding? What's that? Right, chanoch lenar al pi darko, educate each child according to his way. But what does it mean, lechanech? What does that verb mean? Right, we translate it means to educate. Where did we see that the word, that pasuk appears in Mishlei? In the Torah, the word chinuch, and it's very important for this context, the word chinuch means something specific. Bona bayis, the pasuk says in Parashas Kitzeitzei, no, maybe it's Shoftim. I don't remember. Somewhere in the middle of Devarim, it says Mio ish asher bona bayis velo chanacho. You build a house, and you were not mechanech the house. Right. What does that mean? How does that have to do with chanoch lenar? What? I hope whoever's under there is okay. It doesn't sound so. I could tell there, but it's more than one. Just all right. We'll go on without that. Shavuot Shalom. What does building a house and being mechanech a house have to do with education and a child?
Well, the way you run your house is the way your child is going to see how you live.
Okay, great. So that creates the environment. But what does the word mean, right? You wouldn't say you dedicate a child, okay? So this question is developed in the introduction to a book called Chovas HaTalmidim, An Obligation of the Students, by the Halakha, the great, the Pious Satzner Rebbe, Klonimus Kalman Shapira, Hashem Yikom Damo Zechus Yagen Aleinu. He was the Rebbe of the Warsaw Ghetto, but before that, he had a yeshiva for students in his town, which was called Piasetzno, which is not far from Warsaw. So the Rebbe says, look at that word carefully, and it also comes up in a halachic context. For example, the Gemara discusses in Maseches Zvachim the idea of lechanech a kli sharis, a holy vessel. You are mechanech the mizbeach, the altar, or you have to install a new menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. So there's a process of chinuch of the vessels, the furniture in the Beis HaMikdash. You don't lecture furniture in the Beis HaMikdash. You inaugurate them in their service. You begin them on the path of their utility, of their use. Mio isha sher bana bayis, a person built a house, velo chanacho, and he hasn't yet started it in the process of using it. Meaning, he built a house, and what has he not done yet? Right, he hasn't lived in it yet. Chinuch means to begin the process for something, whether it's a piece of furniture or it's a child, for its ultimate purpose, for its use. So lechanech, to inaugurate a house, means to use it for the first time. That's the first usage. That's breaking it in, so to speak. Breaking in a house, that's you use it the first time. To be mechanech a kli sharis means the first time that this vessel is used in its service. So how are you mechanech the mizbeach? You have to bring a certain offering, and then that bringing of that offering is the first step in the future service of the mizbeach. That's chinuch. So he says that's chinuch of a child. It's enabling the child to begin their process of fulfilling their purpose in the world. That is the word chinuch, lechanech, to inaugurate. So as we help children develop into who they can become, that's what education is focused on. It's focused on enabling, right? That's his whole educational philosophy, child-centered, that's not for today. But it's not about memorization, and it's not about coercion, although sometimes coercion is good. It's necessary. But the idea is that what we're trying to do is set this child up so that they are in the path of their purpose in life. That's chinuch. We are inaugurating children at every stage to what they're supposed to become. So now, if that's the definition of chinuch, so what is chinuch for emuna? So chinuch for emuna is setting us in the path of having emuna, right? It's beginning the emuna process. It's not a lecture about emuna. Chinuch for emuna is not a TED talk on faith. Chinuch for emuna means the beginning of a faithful life. That's the chinuch. As you start to get in that swing of things, as you start to live like that, that beginning, that inauguration, that's the chinuch of emuna. So chinuch for emuna means let's start that emuna process for ourselves. And starting that process is chinuch. That is the chinuch. Okay. That was just the preamble, he says, to the Pirush HaMishnayos in the following section. So I'm on line number 3, where he quotes from the Mishnah of Pirkei Avos in the 4th chapter. The 4th chapter teaches us, in this brief line here, Amar, he says, meaning the Mishnah teaches, Hakina, jealousy, Vahatava, and desires, and this has a specific reference point in terms of physical desires. The avas hakavod, the Mishnah says, kina taiva and kavod, and here it means the love for honor. Motzian es ha'adam min ha'olam. They remove the person from this world. Vahu, says the Rambam, ki be'ela hamidos, with these measures, with these qualities, o ba'achas mehen, or with one of them, yafsid emunas ha'Torah behechreach. A person will lose the emuna of the Torah with certainty. These three things. So he says, mevayer ha'Rambam, Rav Volpe explains that the Rambam is telling us, ki shalosh midas elu, these three qualities, motzios es ha'adam min ha'olam. They take the person out of the world. What does it mean they take the person out of the world? Me emunaso. Why ki olamu shal ha'adam zuhi emunaso. A person's world is their emuna. And emuna does not mean one thing, and it doesn't mean the same thing for two different people. But the idea of emuna as being our world, our orientation, the place where we're rooted, the fixed point that we come back to at the end of every day in our lives, that's the interesting observation that Rav Volpe is pointing out from this Rambam. Right? The Mishnah says these three qualities remove a person from the olam. And the Rambam says that means remove the person from their emuna. So says Rav Volpe, you see that what is our world? Our world is our emuna. For the Rambam, those two terms are synonymous. They're interchangeable. Emuna and the world. Ki olamu shel ha'adam zui emunaso. Okay. Two things. The first one, how would you categorize these qualities? Jealousy, materialistic or physical or hedonistic drives, and arrogance, the pursuit of honor and hubris. How would you categorize them? Yeah?
Being self-centered.
Self-centered, okay.
Very much.
Would you say that they are on the positive end of the media spectrum or not so positive?
Not so.
Not so positive, great. So it's important to know, Rav Kook points this out in the Ein Ayan, his commentary on the Talmud and the Agadata and Brachos, that every midah has a place. And every midah, even a midah like arrogance, which is arguably the worst, the most damaging, the most pernicious of all character traits, even that has some place. So it's important to note that we're not saying that these three traits have no place in our life, and that there's never a time to apply one of these three, or all of these three, qualities. But what we are saying is that usually, oftentimes, more often than not, these three midos are not going to take us toward the Ribbono Shel Olam. They're going to take us away. They all have that self-centered component, and that's the shorish of everything which is ra. So it's important to note that we're not saying that these three midos are wholly and completely worthless. They each have a little bit of something to contribute to our life. Look, we have Chazal of an expression, kina sofrim tarba chachma. Competition among scholars increases knowledge. Right? So that's a good thing. Taiva, the Gemara says in Yuma that it was a period in the period in the time where the sages, it's a much bigger conversation than we have time for, and that's not the focus, but the conversation the Gemara has is about the sages neutralizing the evil inclination, the Yetzer Hara. So they were able to neutralize the Yetzer Hara for idol worship, which is why to us it's so anachronistic. It's so hard to understand why somebody would have any desire to worship an idol. But the Gemara says that initially they also wanted to remove the desire for sexual impropriety. And the Gemara says that they locked up that Yetzer Hara, and then the next morning they went down, they couldn't find any eggs. No chickens had laid eggs. So the Gemara says that you realize, what's that?
What's the kesher?
The kesher is that mating comes from the root of a person's taiva, their desire. So Chazal says, you see that Yetzer Hara is constructive. It's very important. You have to have that Yetzer Hara. So the Gemara says that they poked out its eyes, and therefore people are not drawn to incest. But the idea is that taiva has an important place. And then kavod also. Understanding what is kavod habrios, a person's dignity, that's a very prominent topic in halacha and in Judaism b'chlal. So these midos have a place. It's not that they have no place. They need to be used sparingly. They're like a very, very strong, fresh, ground up pepper, you know, used very wisely and effectively. Because generally speaking, they take a person away from emuna. So Rav Volpe is going to spend the next section, the next paragraph, how figuring out how these things take away a person's emunah. What I'd like to think about before that is actually the reverse. How does a person who has emunah conquer these three things? You're nodding. You figured it out. You have a theory?
I have no answers, but I knew where you were going.
It's right. Why don't we think about it in the opposite? The next section is going to be about how these things are challenges. But I want to think about it from the opposite, which is a person who is a person of emunah, a baal emunah, a person whose life is rooted in their olamo, is their emunah. How does that person overcome these challenges? Well, let's go back.
Do you want to overcome, or do you want to utilize those for constructive reasons for your emunah?
Probably a little bit of both, but I'm wondering if maybe overcoming is not the right word, but I want to go back to where we started, which is now we understand how a person's frame is going to shape how they experience something. What I'm wondering is, a person who lives with an emunah frame, how does that emunah frame enable them not to get sucked in to problems of kina, tava, and kavod? Because that is a very powerful tool for us. As we go through life, we're going to, you know, some people to varying different degrees of challenge, we're going to struggle with kina, tava, and kavod that are going to be those siren sounds that are calling us in various experiences. But if emunah is living with the Ribbono Shel Olam, having the Ribbono Shel Olam as part of your life on an ongoing basis, of feeling close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that He is here with me in the here and now on an ongoing basis, if that's the core of emunah, of being with the Ribbono Shel Olam and feeling the Ribbono Shel Olam is with me, then that can reframe all of these. Because who's really the important influence in my life? If the Ribbono Shel Olam is with me all the time, then He takes center stage. He's in the middle of the circle, and everything revolves around that. The Ribbono Shel Olam being in the middle changes how I experience all things. So where does kinah come from? Jealousy comes from feeling like, well, either I should have what that person has, or I wish that, you know, that my situation was a different situation, something like along those lines. I can't believe that you have and I don't. But that's because I'm looking at you and I'm thinking, well, that's the measure of what I want, because I made up this idea that was something that's important. But if the Ribbono Shel Olam and being with the Ribbono Shel Olam and living with the Ribbono Shel Olam is what's in the center, if that's my emunah, then why does it really matter what somebody else has? Because it's about being together with the Ribbono Shel Olam in this circumstance. Yeah.
Or it could be that you believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you all the capabilities you need right now to accomplish your specific goal.
Right. So that goes back to the Hashgacha Pratis question, right? Depending on how you view and understand Hashgacha Pratis will dictate that exact point. For those for whom emunah and hashgacha pratis are very closely aligned, you'll even take it to that level and you'll say, look, it's not just that I don't need to be jealous of somebody else because, you know, I can be with the Ribbono Shel Olam in my circumstance. It's that obviously the Ribbono Shel Olam gave me this specific circumstance that is tailor-made for my life and what I'm supposed to accomplish. Right? It's a little bit different, right? Because if you're, I don't like to weigh in on the Hashgacha Pratis debate because there are two, or there are multiple sides on this, right? But for the Hashgacha Pratis camp, that's how they view it. For the non-Hashgacha Pratis camp, it doesn't mean that people do not believe that there is Hashgacha Pratis. It's just that it's difficult to identify when something is Hashgacha Pratis and when it's Hashgacha Klolis, depending on a person's level, on their spiritual level. But that doesn't really matter, because if the Ribbono Shel Olam is part of my life, and I'm going through life together with Him, then that experience of being together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that I'm focused on my experience with Him and not what somebody else is doing. I'll give you a mashal for that, for the non-Hashgacha Pratis focus aspect of this.
Can you just remind me what those those terms mean.
Sorry, I apologize.
Trying to go, what is that?
Good, thank you, I apologize. Well said, yes.
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry at all. I'm sorry that I forgot that we haven't talked about it in a while.
Somewhere.
Yes, I also did somewhere, so I wrote it down to translate and I forgot to do that, so I apologize. Hashgacha pratis, pratis, the word prat means a detail, a specific. Lahashgiach, like a mashgiach in a kitchen, is somebody who supervises. So hashgacha pratis means that God has specific, particular supervision over something. Hashgacha klolis means, klal means general. So that means that God is generally supervising something. So for example, the wildebeest, the Ribono Shel Olam is mashgiach, is supervising that there should be wildebeests in the world and they shouldn't all get eaten up by all of the the lions or the hyenas, because that would put the circle of life out of balance. But the Ribono Shel Olam does not have a particular interest in one specific wildebeest. So if this wildebeest got eaten and the other one didn't get eaten, you know, from a spiritual vantage point, that's probably not super significant. When it comes to people, that's very different. And there is an old, long-standing debate about how to view Hashgacha Pratis in a person's particular life, in my life. Do I believe that every single step, every aspect of my life is being governed by Hashgacha Pratis, particular supervision from God, and what I'm getting now is specific to me because I deserve it, because I need it, because it's for a specific person, purpose? Or do I say, wait a second, no. Only certain people, or at certain points in my life, do I merit specific direct supervision. Other times, I don't merit direct supervision. I'm subject to the world of nature that God created, but he could intervene at any time, depending on where I am in my relationship with him. So my point is to say that a life of emunah means, even without hashgacha pratis, without saying, oh, this is a direct result of God, and that's why I received this, I didn't receive that, so why should I be jealous? God wanted me to have this. But even if a person is at the level where they're not having hashgacha pratis, possibly, even without that added element, there's still something to reflect on, which is, wait a second, if the important thing is that the Ribono Shel Olam is with me, then he's with me in every circumstance. So why am I looking at somebody else's circumstance? Lahavdil, let's say you have a couple, and forgive me for the marriage analogy, but I think that it's important in terms of this application. You have a couple, and they have not gone on vacation for a very long time, and they save up, and they decide they're going to go on a vacation. And they're of modest means, so their saving up means that after a very long time, they're going to stay in a 4-star hotel, which is a beautiful hotel. They've never stayed in such a place. And this is going to be their time. They're going to leave their family. They're going to leave their cell phones. They're going to leave their job. They're going to leave everything and just spend time together in this 4-star hotel. And here they are sitting in this 4-star hotel, drinking coffee. Again, it's a mashal. I don't drink coffee, so that has nothing to do with me. Imagine this couple is drinking coffee and they're just there. No one is bothering them and they're in a place where it didn't snow 2 days ago. No, Elena. They're drinking coffee and they're looking out on the ocean and they're so relaxed and they're just talking. They're catching up. They haven't gotten to spend time together. And one of the two says, you know what? I so wish I was 2 doors down because that resort is the five-star resort. You'd say, I don't understand. What are you talking about? Does it really matter? If the two of us are having a good time together and that's what's important, that's why we're here, why does it matter that we're at the 4-star and not at the 5-star? Does it really matter? Right? The kinnah says, oh, I wish I had that. But if our life is being with the Ribono Shel Olam in the here and now, so the Ribono Shel Olam is with us all the time. And he's with us even when we get the flat tire and we don't even make it to the 4-star hotel because we end up in the motel or we're sleeping in the car, lo aleinu. But we're together. We're having this experience together. And Muna says that the Ribono Shel Olam is with me and I'm with the Ribono Shel Olam. So the whole concept of kinnah It goes out the window. If I have emunah, so then why am I even looking at somebody else? I'm looking at the revulsion and say, oh, look at the circumstance that I have. We're going to be in this together. I don't need to look at somebody else's because it's just the two of us. It's just me and the Ribbono Shel Olam. Why am I looking at somebody else?
Seems like it's a circumstantial. Like certain people have a more natural tendency. Like if you think about your kids, so I have ones that are like totally impulsive.
Yeah.
And then I have ones that have like no desire to be that way. And then also like with adults, like the people you surround yourself with. Like you can be in on a block with people who are like really elevated, or you can be like on a block people in your whole Shabbos is talking about like clothes and shoes, it's hard to control it.
Right.
So it's like, if you want to be thinking about Hashem, like you're saying, you have to surround yourself with people that are
doing that. Right.
Which is hard to, we're doing ourselves, and even harder to like make our kids do.
Yeah, because that's 100% right, because even if we're cultivating this within ourselves, the context in which we are maybe is not conducive to it. So that requires a whole nother exploration. We need to figure out what are the strategies, how do we build it for us internally, and then what's our circle of influence? What can we do in the seviva, in the environment in which we are in, to nurture this? Because sometimes it's hard. But the first point that you made was before the environment was the internal. You know, for some people, emunah comes very natural. It comes naturally, I should say, to them. And for other people, it doesn't come naturally to them. So we have to build that if it doesn't come naturally to us. And we need to grow in it. All right, we're running out of time. I only got through one. But the same thing, just al regel achas, literally regel achas, is the same thing for taiva. And all of these are aspirations. These are not something, certainly not that I've ever accomplished, or most people ever accomplish. It's a lifetime, and then beyond some, to get to this level of emunah. But what we're saying is, this is what we aspire to, that a person who really lives with emunah at that high level, at that platinum emunah, they're not looking at anybody else, because it's just them and their Ribbono Shel Olam, and they're not worrying about what else is going on around them. And the same thing for taiva. Somebody who leads their life, people who lead their lives in the pursuit of material pleasure and the hedonistic here and now, making your body feel good, so then obviously emunah combats them, because emunah says who we truly are is not our physical. It's our core spiritual self. That's our neshama. That's who we are. That's how we define ourselves. So then, yes, the physical is going to support that spiritual growth, that emotional, psychological, religious growth, but that physical is not going to be the end-all and the be-all. So our whole orientation toward tava, toward material and physical desires, is completely different. Of course, it's not all about taiva. And then the last one is kavod also. Where do we draw our honor from? We sit in the side of the table, we sit in the corner of the room, and we feel that, you know what? Our contributions are not being recognized. We're not being acknowledged. We're not being given the honor or the respect or the dignity that we deserve. And that's hard. And so then we start seeking that. We look for those accolades. We look for that recognition. And that can lead us down a very unhealthy path, a very dangerous path. But a person of emunah says, well, the Ribbono Shel Olam is the most important thing in my life. And so I'm always reflecting on what is my relationship and what's my status vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, the Ribbono Shel Olam knows all of my imperfections, and yet he still wakes me up in the morning. He still loves me, still cares for me. That should be what matters. This person disrespected me, and that person didn't call on me at the table. You know, I'm sure over Pesach, everybody had these experiences where you just felt like, you know, a little respect, please. You know, and just fill in the blank of what you did or what that person did. But at the end of the day, if that incident is taken in the context of a life of emunah, a life that says, well, the Ribbono Shel Olam is at the center, and that I matter to him, and that he thinks that I'm important, and he sees what I'm doing, and that's what's going to really be counted at the end of the day, and that's where I'm putting this, you know, this quote-unquote value, so then I feel better about myself. I don't need to chase the kavod of other human beings when there is the Melech HaKavod, when the Ribbono Shel Olam, he thinks that what I'm doing is important, he thinks that what I'm doing is valuable. So the idea is that, number one, we have chinuch for emuna. We have to, this gets back maybe to your point, Wendy, we have to be mechanach ourselves to emuna. We have to inculcate it and begin inaugurating that process. We have to recognize that there are midos out there that test our emuna, that can challenge our emuna, but we also see how a life of emuna enables us to mitigate these challenges. A life of emuna enables us to overcome and to, by reframing, it's not by doing anything different, but by reframing, we totally experience, we completely change our experience for kina, taiva, and kavod, for jealousy, for desire, and for honor, by orienting it through the prism, through that central rooted orientation of emuna.